Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. President Donald Trump has made restricting immigration a central component of his administration and campaign messaging. On the other side, former Vice President Joe Biden has promised to reverse Trump's family separation policy, set up a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants, and establish a fair and humane immigration system. With the election approaching next week, we'll discuss each candidate's policy positions in one of the nation's most divisive issues. Here with us is Tyke Hendrick, senior editor covering immigration for KQED. Tyke, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Mina.
So first, just start us out by explaining the core differences between the two men's positions.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it is really striking that immigration has not been a central focus so much in this election campaign, when it really was a signature issue in Trump's rise to power in the presidency. Mm-hmm. And the contrast is really stark between the two of them. President Trump has, in a very effective and pretty relentless way, brought through more than 400, mostly executive actions that have restricted immigration in a pretty wide range of ways. You remember the travel ban on people from mostly Muslim countries going back to the very first weeks of his presidency. He's effectively blocked access to asylum for migrants at the southern border. There's a freeze on green cards and visas, attempts to punish sanctuary cities for not cooperating with immigration enforcement, a whole raft of issues there that President Trump has pushed through. And then on the other side, Vice President Biden has taken a tone that is much more about welcoming immigrants and having an immigration policy that would respect the rule of law, but also embrace immigrants as a integral part of the country. And one thing he came out with that surprised some people at the debate last week was to say, within the first 100 days, he was going to bring forward an immigration reform bill in Congress to legalize the estimated 11 million undocumented people in the country. So that is a striking move, and one that really sets him apart from Trump.
Tyke, do you think that has something to do with Obama's legacy on immigration? I mean, there has been some call for him to explain, to apologize. I mean, do you think in some ways he's trying to mitigate the history of Obama's administration in terms of being the, quote, deporter in chief?
Right. Well, with people more on the progressive end of the spectrum, there is definitely baggage that the Obama administration had with both, more than 3 million deportations, but also Obama himself promised an immigration reform bill in the first 100 days. And then that priority was really overtaken by the Great Recession and the need to right the economy, and then the decision to push forward on healthcare reform. So immigration really kind of fell off the agenda during the Obama administration. He did some course correcting and created the DACA program for young undocumented immigrants. And then really installed some priorities in terms of enforcement that were about targeting people who were, criminals with violent histories rather than otherwise law-abiding immigrants who were unauthorized. So, but yeah, Biden is definitely dealing with that legacy. And I think immigrant advocates who were patient during the Obama years and then kind of came away empty-handed in terms of immigration reform, I think are not going to be so patient with a Biden administration if he's elected.
We're talking about the presidential candidate's immigration policies with Tyke Hendricks, a senior editor who covers immigration for KQED. And you, our listeners, can join us by calling 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. What immigration policies would you like to see continue or change in the next presidential term? What do you think of the presidential candidate's approaches to immigration? I mean, Tyke Hendricks, you did lay out all the actions that Trump did, especially early on in his presidency related to immigration, since it was such a focal point of his 2016 campaign. Why do you think it's taken such a backseat in the run-up to this election?
You know, it's a really interesting question. I mean, the obvious answer is the pandemic has pushed so many other issues to the side, and not only the public health crisis that we're all dealing with, but the economic crisis that the coronavirus pandemic has led to, and then, you know, racial justice protests, the way that climate change is, you know, is making itself felt through wildfires and hurricanes. So these are all legitimate issues that are demanding our attention. But, you know, there's also some speculation that Trump's restrictive immigration policies are not that popular in a broad way in this country, where 3/4 of Americans say that immigrants are good for the United States. And that's certainly even more the case in California and the Bay Area, where, you know, almost 1 in 3 of us in the Bay Area are people born in another country. And then, of course, countless others who have immigrant parents or immigrant spouses, and we all work with immigrants and so forth. So, you know, immigrants are integral to our communities and our society. And it may be that those restrictive approaches that are popular with people in President Trump's base are not big vote getters more broadly.
Well, this listener tweets, if Trump wins and tries to enact Miller's policies regarding sanctuary cities, it would pit the federal government not only against states and cities, but also many universities who depend on federal grants. What can you tell us about that?
Well, there are, you know, sanctuary policies in many cities in California, and especially in the Bay Area. And then the state of California itself has a sanctuary policy, which is basically to say, you know, we are local law enforcement. Our job is not to enforce federal immigration law, and we're not going to cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement on arresting and deporting people. Now, there are big exceptions to that with the state sanctuary law, which, you know, when there are people who are violent criminals, there is cooperation. But this is something that the Trump administration has really tried to punish local cities for their sanctuary policies. They've been thwarted in court, but it may be something, and I think Trump's advisor Stephen Miller has come out in the last day or so saying, you know, this will be a focal point for a second term, along with other things like expanding the travel ban and further restricting asylum.
Well, let me go to caller Will in Castro Valley. Hi, Will, join us.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm calling because I wanted to bring up how I feel like the left doesn't talk about the economic benefits as much for immigration, especially in the long term. You know, the right often talks about, you know, stealing jobs, you know, how immigrants steal jobs and it costs the economy money to bring all these asylum seekers in and whatnot. And I just feel like that's not true. You know, I feel like the left has the upper hand in argument in morality division, because we don't want to separate kids from their families. You know, we want asylum seekers to be safe. And the right, they hammer the economic impact or what they perceive as the economic impact. But I just feel like their arguments aren't true. And, you know, the immigrants drive the economy in many ways, especially in the long term. And I just feel that's something that should be brought up more often.
Well, thanks. I mean, Taiki, both candidates have said that their policies would boost the economy, but as Will points out, in different ways. Can you explain the differences?
Sure. And I think this is a place where we see such a difference, not only in terms of policy, but also in terms of tone and the sort of the tone and the tenor of the two campaigns and candidates in terms of, you know, how we view immigrants in this country. And there are these sort of moral questions that the caller raised around family separation and so forth. But also President Trump, yes, has really cast immigrants as a drain on the economy and people who are stealing jobs. And I think there's a kind of a scapegoating that he didn't invent, but that has been out there in this country for some time. That, you know, there are big changes, macro changes in our economy, globalization, technology is shifting jobs. We're moving to sort of a gig economy in a lot of places. And there are a lot of people who are feeling economic insecurity. So that his message that immigrants are to blame is tapping into that insecurity. Looking at the Biden platform, and you can go look at his website on immigration, you know, he is actually at least sort of, you know, in that platform, drawing connections to the ways that immigrants do stimulate the economy and help contribute and are integral to our prosperity, both as producers and consumers. So that is an argument, and it hasn't always been the front and center one, but it's conceivable that that's something that Biden would put some focus on, because it's, you know, it is something he's outlined. But as we've said, it hasn't been a major talking point to this point in the campaign.
Let me go next to caller Leslie in Bolinas. Hi, Leslie. Hi, Leslie. Are you with us?
Oh, yes. Sorry.
No problem. You're on the air.
Thank you. When you describe a policy attributable to a president and you talk about Obama, oftentimes, and you say, well, he didn't do this and he didn't do that, he was tied into a Republican Senate who would not approve anything. And I don't think that is mentioned enough.
Hmm.
He was not solely responsible for what happened, but it's always described like that. So.
Well, right. And part of the frustration, Taiki Hendricks, mm-hmm. is that Obama actually had, you know, both chambers in the first part of his presidency.
Yeah.
And he did not take advantage of that to try to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Leslie's That's absolutely right that he resorted to executive action later because he was being blocked by a Republican controlled Senate.
Right. Yes. And there definitely were other priorities that jumped the line. And his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, felt like immigration reform was a hot potato, and they were going to spend too much political capital on trying to push an immigration reform bill. And they backed away from it in those early years of Obama's presidency. And then, as the caller says, the Senate, when there was Republican control, was not interested in an immigration reform. So Obama really moved in his last couple of years into using executive actions as much as possible and kind of trying to push the envelope, not only DACA for the kids who were brought here as children unlawfully, but then also trying to extend that to the parents of citizens and legal residents. And that got thwarted in the courts. But then Trump has really taken that executive action approach and run with it, because he doesn't control both houses of Congress either and hasn't been able to pass bills. So Congress is a big piece of this. And this election is not just about the president, obviously, but you know, what if Biden were to be elected, what he could do on immigration as president would really depend on whether Democrats also win control of the Senate. That's, you know, I mean, those are all open questions at this point as far as who is going to win this election.
We're talking about the presidential candidate's immigration policies with Tyke Hendricks, senior editor covering immigration for KQED. And you, our listeners, let me go next to Mohammed in San Jose. Hi, Mohammed.
Hello. I see a contradiction in the policies of the administration here when they try to enforce local government, local state governments to cooperate with the federal government enforcing the immigration policy, while, you know, when it comes to the pandemic policy or other policies, they say, no, we should leave as much freedom to the states to implement, their policies however they want, when it comes to mandates and what else. And also, this contradicts with the conservative general policy as well, you know, to reduce the size of the government and also, you know, leave as much freedom to the states. Could you comment on that?
Mohammed, thanks. I mean, consistency around this, Tyke Hendricks, that's certainly been something that we haven't seen from Republicans or Democrats, but particularly Republicans around this issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, it highlights, the different levels of authority around immigration, which is it's a federal policy, the laws on immigration are federal laws. Then we have states like California that have come up with their own laws. They don't control federal issues around deportation or around, you know, who's admitted to the country, but they do, we have a lot of state policies that have really tried to embrace immigrants and be welcoming there. So there is definitely some disconnect between state and federal on immigration.
Well, Butch writes, are you aware that the U.S. is the third most populous nation after China and India? Are you aware that the U.S. has the highest immigration rates in the world? Restricting immigration is a fact of life and by no means controversial. Tyke Hendricks, Stephen Miller, Trump's lead advisor on immigration, of course, said the administration will double down on policies such as limiting asylum, work visas, and penalizing so-called sanctuary cities. I mean, can you talk more about the efforts to basically clamp down on the border that Trump will likely continue and potentially double down on if he is awarded another term?
Right. I mean, the restrictive efforts have been both on unauthorized immigration, but also on really throttling legal immigration. And they just set the lowest cap for the number of refugees that the U.S. will take since we've had a refugee program. 15,000 people is the cap for this current coming year. Biden has said he would expand that back up to 125,000 refugees that we'll admit. And yes, it's true, the U.S. has had a pretty generous policy on immigration historically. We are a big country, so the number of immigrants that we admit is not enormous relative to our population. But really stark contrast between a welcoming approach and one that really feels that immigrants are a negative force and something kept out.
One of many stark contrasts between our two candidates making this election very high stakes. Tyke Hendricks, thanks so much for talking to us about the candidates' immigration policies and plans.
Great to talk with you, Mina.
Tyke Hendricks, senior editor covering immigration for KQED. Thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. Stay with us for another hour of Forum. We'll be talking election anxiety. I'm Mina Kim in for Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.